everybody, and welcome to edition 271 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. And we are recording this online from our own homes, but as ever, bringing you all the latest news and talking points for Formula 1. Coming up, return of the walking weapon, fired up Ferrari, and seven heaven for Hamilton. I am Damon Hill Radical and blogger Richard Baxter. Joining me on tonight's podcast is two-time Speckles Kart champion, the Oracle, Kyle Cumbers.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening. And I'm sure, Kyle, I'm sure you're as excited as I am, because I'm very excited, because we have Hamilton himself. not Lewis, but NRF1 podcast co-founder. Head is in the house.
Hello, gents. How's things? Yeah, Team Hamilton.
Hamilton by name, not quite in the way of world champions, but you're our world champion.
I don't think I've ever won something seven times. it's awesome. It's good to be here. I've missed a fair few, but it's really exciting to be back.
It's great to have you guys. How have you both been? You're coping well, obviously, in the middle of a second national lockdown.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm still buzzing after the weekend of racing, so all good.
Good.
Well, and that's exactly it. You know, sometimes I have to try and find excuses. Oh, no, sorry, sweetheart, we can't go and do the food shop now because the race is about to... Well, like, well, not allowed out now. You know, well, no, you can for shopping. It's like, no, not allowed out. Lockdown, sweetheart, can't go anywhere. We can't go and see family and stuff like that. We've got to stay home and watch the race. So, you know, it's great. It's not great. I appreciate it's a sensitive subject for a lot of people. So, but no, in truth, doing well, still cracking along, still working, still healthy, and that's all we can really hope for. So
awesome, that's great stuff. Good, so we might as well jump straight into it, because Turkish Grand Prix back to the circuit for the first time since 2011. I mean, we said it was a great race. I think a lot of that kind of helped because there was a new track surface which seemed to make it very slippery, and of course even worse when it rained in qualifying and the race.
No, please, you go, Kyle. These are the issues that we have when we can't see each other's faces.
I'd say it was made a good, kind of bizarre weekend, really, wasn't it? Because I didn't see Friday practice until later on, but all you heard was F1 cars were drifting. Sounds a bit bizarre, and then you actually saw them, and it was just mad. It was just, I suppose, this probably the first time the whole trying to cram as much into a season as possible has created a few issues, but in the end those issues created a hell of a mad and bonkers weekend and race.
I think it's
good to be back in Turkey.
I second that, actually. It's good to be back in Turkey. It's a cracking circuit, but I think it was George Russell who came out and just sort of said, look, you know, it might have made a really fun race from your sofa. It might have been really, really great to watch, but that's not what Formula One's about. Formula One is about peak machine, you know, the high end of mechanical engineering and the best drivers in the world who are able to put their foot down and race without having to contend with the track. And, you know, and he was very then quick to caveat that and come back and just sort of say, you know, they did a great job. They got it resurfaced and hats off to them. And, you know, they worked really hard and not taking away from that. But this isn't Formula One. And I think he nailed that on the head, is that actually, yeah, it might have been absolute hell for you guys, but I'm not going to apologize for the fact that I was on the edge of my seat for the whole thing, because it was a really, really enjoyable race. But I just want to ask you guys, would it have been worse for the drivers, because I'm not going to say worse for us, because we enjoyed it, and the general consensus is it was an enjoyable experience to watch that race. Would it have been worse for the drivers if they'd left the old surface on? What do you reckon?
I imagine it'd have been pretty dusty, because it's been unused for so many years, hasn't it? But
yeah, there's rumours it was a car park, wasn't it, for a few years? But I don't know how much has happened there for since 2011. And they sort of said it was bumpy and haven't done anything since the track was created however many years ago. But So, yes, so hard to tell, isn't it?
I suppose it would have come down to driver personal preference, would it? Do you prefer a bumpy track that's still grippy, yeah, or do you prefer a sliding track? I imagine from an engineer's point of view, and I'd love to get Dan's opinion on this, but I imagine from an engineer's point of view, you'd rather a smooth, slippy track because the vibrations can knock your bodywork loose and out of whack, can't it? So,
yeah, that's true.
I imagine the teams probably prefer a slippier track. But there were some drivers out there that looked like they were having a whale of a time, you know. So, but yeah, it was great race. Really enjoyed it.
No, it really was. And it all kind of really took off, essentially, in qualifying. Obviously, it rained. Before we actually get down to the results of qualifying, we need to have a quick mention. In Q2, there was a recovery vehicle still on the track when they started. Now, I don't know what was going on with the stewards and why they allowed it to start with a recovery vehicle on track, but we don't want to see that at all.
There's no defence for it, is there?
No. Yeah,
I mean, one
minute longer, 2 minutes longer, it would have been off the circuit, it would have been fine. But why didn't they just wait?
Yeah, there's no point in letting cars go out, even if they're on warm-up laps. There's absolutely no point in letting cars go out if they can't put their foot down, get heat into their tyres. If you're going to send them out and then send them straight into a set of double-waved yellows, you don't have to do any work to get them into the pits. They're already in the pits. Like, yeah. I can absolutely understand that if you were mid-session, but this is different. You know, everyone's already in the pits. Just hold them there.
And in the rain as well.
And the problem is that, you know, someone who's been only watching F1 for the last 2-3 years might not know why that's such a precaution that's necessary to take. But the sad truth of it is that we've seen what can happen.
Yeah.
And that's why I think people were quite up in arms about it. Is that this isn't a theoretical situation we're talking about. This isn't a what if. This is a remember when.
Yeah. So true. So true. Yeah, moving on from that, obviously, they all went safely. Fortunately, there was no dramas with that. They're all fine. Even the drivers were questioning why the recovery vehicle was there, but they completed qualifying. It was all good. And quite a surprising, intense Q3. I mean, we had 12 minutes and every single driver was out there trying to get pole position. And in the end, it was Lance Stroll, as we nicknamed him several years ago, the walking weapon. Which we should just explain that nickname because...
Do we need to explain that nickname?
I feel like people don't understand it.
Yeah, but I feel... Now, you see, I'm going to upset people here because I'm going to say, I feel like if you don't understand it, that's not our fault.
We're not going to explain it then.
No, I mean, it's pretty... His name is... Okay, I'll explain it. His name is Lance Stroll. The walking weapon. I mean, if you need me to spell that out, if I need visual aids for that, I will. Okay, if anyone out there listening doesn't understand why that's his nickname, message the NRF1 podcast on Twitter or on our socials, and I will draft a PowerPoint presentation explaining to you why it's his nickname, and I will gift you a Zoom session so I can present it to you virtually. And I mean that 100%. But you have to genuinely not understand it. You can't just be like, oh, I think it'd be a laugh to get paid to do a PowerPoint presentation. Because I promise you, it's not a laugh. It's boring. My PowerPoint presentations are boring. So, but I will do it. I will do it. Anyway,
it's so good to have you back on a podcast, Ped.
I didn't mean to cut across you there, Rich. I'm so sorry. But please do continue.
But all I was going to say is it was him who came and stole the pole position and... away from Red Bull. I mean, Red Bull looked set to have it, but Lance Stroll, the walking weapon, he took pole position.
Yeah, yes, he did. And this is absolutely fascinating stuff from my perspective anyway, because Max was on a really fast looking lap and they pitted him to change his tyres. And they thought, this is the way that we need to go. And he came out and he was slow as anything. And a lot of people say he's thrown away pole. But I actually, if you look at the figures, and I think someone else may have already picked up on this, I don't think I'm breaking news here, but if you look at the numbers and you look at the lap times, the time that Stroll actually got pole with, we're not sure that Max would have even been able to match that time had he stayed out and done and completed his lap, Lance would have been quicker. So were we actually seeing true pace there and not just the track rubbering in and coming to the drivers? Was that true one lap pace from the Racing Points?
Yeah, I think so. I think, like I said, that Max Verstappen lap, we had no idea where it was, but they were improving quite a bit towards the end of that session, weren't they? And just, I think, Stroll and the setup on his car was number one on the day, and he caused a massive Max Verstappen drop as well, which was quite funny. Him sulking next to the bins.
Oh my gosh!
To qualify. But
I think, yeah, I agree, and it was. And we had a couple of good tantrums this weekend. Actually, we had one at the end of the race as well, which I hope Rich is in your notebook, which I think it is, for us to talk about a little bit later. But you have to remember that, and I'm sorry to all the people that are that age and that are listening to podcasts, but they're kids. Yeah. I mean, Max is what, 21, 20? Someone tell me. Maybe I should look it up.
Hang on. Let's have a look.
Yeah, there you go.
He's been around quite a while now, hasn't he?
If he was like 19 when he got his first victory or something, wasn't he?
He's 23.
He's 23. That is, I mean, I look back to when I was 23, and if things didn't go my way, I was known to throw a toy out of the pram or two. Because of course we were, because that's what you do. You know, and racing drivers, they're so passionate, and they're so focused, and they're so driven, and they so desperately want to win. And I don't think there's many more. I think there's that many more people on the grid who want to win more than Max Verstappen wants to win. I mean, that boy wants to win. So you can absolutely understand if he thinks that it's something that was within his power to have taken and he didn't. I can completely see how he had his little sulky tantrum. And I think it's really easy to. I'm not coming at you with this, Kyle, at all.
No.
But it's really easy to chastise and just kind of like, oh, yeah, look at that. Especially if you don't like him. And I know there's a lot of people out there who don't like Max Verstappen because of his attitude and what have you. If you're a racing fan, you have to like the way he drives. It's fantastic. But I just think we just forget that they're young, man. They really are young.
Anyway. The one thing I will give him a little bit of stick for, which I didn't like, was straight after qualifying. Obviously, Stroll took it. No one was really expecting him to get pole position. And all the drivers, like even Hamilton went over, gave him a, you know, high five, pat on the back and everything. All the drivers were saying, well done. You know, you did good. Apart from Verstappen, who didn't do anything until later on. And he just gave him a little fist bump and then he walks away. But that obviously, just in that moment of where he was so angry with himself that he didn't get pole position, that was obviously just he wasn't in the mood. He wasn't thinking about that at the time, because essentially he's just been beaten.
Yeah, and I mean, sportsmanship, it's not lacking, but I don't think. I also think more gets made of it than needs to be. You know. And actually, that's stuff for the cameras. So it's, you know, you never know. In the back, in the briefings, you know, there could have been proper handshakes and well done's and what have you. But it's also, are you able to bleep this in post-production?
Of course you can.
Yeah, because it's also good shit housing. in that, you know, half the game is psychological. And if you know, going up to someone and hand slapping them and high fiving them and congratulating them and being friendly with them, I think Brundle. Even I was watching the because it's only on Sky now, isn't it? So I say I was watching the Sky coverage. I was watching it on Sky, so I wasn't watching Channel 4 highlights or anything. And even Brundle said, I think it was later in, and I'm getting ahead into the race, but it was when I think Lando nudged George Russell out the way. And I think Brundle said, he's like, see, that's what I want to see. I don't want to see any of this lovey-dovey best friend social media stuff. I want to see people racing. And I think there is this case, this new generation, this young crop of drivers coming through. We get this perception that, you know, they're all mates with each other. They're all friends. They all enjoy each other. I got no problem with Max having a little bit of a pissed off edge to him and not wanting to go and hand slap someone and not wanting to go and be someone's best mate. I mean, again, it's just what we saw. There's probably plenty of stuff that happened off camera, but I don't mind that he's got a bit of an edge to him.
No, it's all fair enough. And we thought Verstappen was upset after qualifying. Imagine how upset he was after the race. because now what a race, but that really did not go his way, because right at the start, he just couldn't get off the line, could he?
That's one of the funniest things I've ever seen on F1. Those two Red Bulls trying to get off the line. It's hilarious.
Just wheels spinning everywhere.
It was like they were like in fourth gear, like, oh, shit, trying to get the wrong gear, and yeah, it's not. They're just, yeah, it's superb. Superb, tell you that bit.
Oh, and we should say, obviously, the first lap is really kind of where a lot of it kicked off. The two racing points got away well, got into the lead. And then we had Hamilton get away well with the two Renaults as well. And then it seemed Hamilton kind of was up the inside of Ricciardo. Ocon was on the outside, collided with Ricciardo. I did say Ricciardo, not Ricciardo, though, because I'm talking quickly. But yeah, Ocon obviously span. Bottas, who had a good start, was there, tried to avoid him. He had a spin. It was all a bit mad at the beginning. And then, of course, Valtteri and Esteban Ocon, they further around the lap decided to crash into each other again.
I thought it was more Bottas' fault there.
Man, Bottas looked like in this race. Bottas looked like who is wrestling? Come on now, guys, it's a professional outfit. Ocon looked like he just hit an oil patch and didn't stop spinning for the rest of the race. I mean, he just looked like he was in a pit and could not climb out of it. It was an atrocious day. And it's almost like a choke. It's almost like you knew you needed to not be outscored by more than 8 points, 6 points, whatever it was going into the day.
Mm.
You just knew you needed to keep it close, but you weren't able to.
No.
And it's not, I mean, I know Hamilton went on to win the race. I know that. But it didn't look like that's what was going to happen.
No.
Not in quali, and certainly not at the start of the race. So if all he'd been able to do was just keep close to him, would the chances that fell to Hamilton have fallen to Bottas? But he couldn't even do it.
No.
So
this was very true, because right at the beginning, Hamilton, even he was up into third, I think. And then, of course, he ran wide in a corner because he had no grip, and he did it at a few, and he lost several places. I think he fell back to about sixth or seventh at one point, because he was himself struggling to keep it on the road. But at least he kept going, whereas Bottas just seemed to... Bottas seemed to actually have spins where he'd do several spins, whereas Hamilton just seemed to kind of keep it in a straight-ish line and, just kind of keep it going. It was mad, and especially as the commentators kept saying, I think the quote was like, oh, Raikkonen and Bottas, who do their ice driving in Finland, are going to be loving these conditions. Yeah. I mean, that didn't really come true in the end.
No, and I also... Go on.
I say with Bottas, because also he spun second corner twice, exactly the same spin, it was just like a replay. And was it four or five spins he had? It was a bit like Massa from 2008 in Silverstone all over again.
he couldn't keep it on the track.
Yeah.
I also, the trope of these drivers will be used to ice driving, I also got sick of hearing the story about how Max's dad used to take him out in slicks in the wet and say, go find the grip. I mean, I've heard that story once. I've heard it enough.
But I mean, how many drivers have Button had that? And...
Yeah, Button's angle was that as well. Dad couldn't afford tread on the tyres, so he always put me out in slicks in the wet. That was ha, ha, ha. Like, it's just, we get it. Everyone does it.
My dad made me do it.
and it led to two separate Beckles Karting Championships. So it obviously works.
And we have evidence of this, of course, because I can't remember if it was earlier this year. I feel like it was earlier this year, Kyle, but you also went with some of the guys and did one of the Norwich City karting events. And of course, it was wet at the start and you took the lead, didn't you?
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah. It's, you obviously never lose the skill.
But yeah, like I say, it's every karting dad has made their son do it. So,
absolutely. But yeah, do you know the only thing that this opening lap missed? That it didn't, the only thing it didn't have that would have made it perfect for me?
What was that?
Rich Baxter live comms. That's what I was hoping for. That's what I wanted. I wanted to hear Rich giving me the opening lap comms, because I reckon they would have been a doozy.
I need to get back on them and do some more of those, actually.
At least do one for the last race of the season.
Yeah, we will do. We need to try and get together and do some do some kind of live broadcasts, kind of live watch-alongs for some of these races. Hopefully the Abu Dhabi one could be a potential, because obviously the start time's a bit nicer, being kind of a Sunday lunchtime. But yeah, it was a shame we didn't have it for Turkey. That would have been nice. But I need to get back on some of those cars.
That's it. Rich, how was snack watch? What did we have for the race? Because it was quite early.
It was, actually, yeah. Snack watch, F1 snack watch, which we haven't done for a while again. We need to get back on this.
But this tells you how long I've been out of the podcast. I'm bringing back all these old, like, half features that we don't do anymore because I've been away for so long.
We'll keep them, I tell you, mate. What it actually was for this race, because it was obviously a morning start, I had a coffee and bagel.
Oh, that's peak. I am on board with that. I mean, I don't want to two sheds you here, but I had banana and blueberry pancakes with crispy bacon and coffee. That was what I had while watching the race.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was pleased with that.
I had the bacon and egg on toast.
Kyle!
Still lucky.
Do you know what? We are just the kings of breakfast, guys. We've absolutely nailed this. Do you know what? Dear F1, dear Liberty, more races in the morning, please. More races at 10 o'clock so that I can get up, get my breakfast ready, get my coffee brewed, and then be ready to go. That's outstanding.
Absolutely. And you know what? All F1 listeners, podcast listeners right now, even though it's a bit late, tweet us, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. We'll go through it all later. But tell us what you had for your F1 breakfast watch.
Oh, yeah.
And just give it a shout. Okay, we're a few days late, but who cares? We want to know, because talking about eggs and bacon and pancakes, and it's making me a bit hungry now, even though I just had dinner.
But, yeah, man, same. You know.
But back to the racing. I mean,
sorry. It's my fault.
It's all right. I mean, it's easy to get distracted by food. But where were we? The race.
The opening lap. That's about as far as we got, Rich. I'm so sorry.
It's a strong start. but yeah, obviously the race opening lap, carnage unfolded. Vettel went from 11th up to 4th. Now, that was a strong opening lap. Ferrari were really back, they seemed, this weekend. We might as well just kind of skip through the race and kind of get towards the end, because there's so much that happened. We could be here for an hour talking about it. But Stroll led most of the race until his team kind of called him in for a pit stop. They copied the Ferraris. They went on to fresh intermediate tyres. The Ferraris got pace from it. Racing Point didn't. So Perez stayed out on his old ones. Stroll came in, got some fresh ones on. He dropped right back. And in the end, I think he fell to 9th in the field, whilst the Ferraris ended up at the end of the race, it was 3rd and 4th. But obviously, they were so close to a bit more. We'll go into that in a while. Hamilton on his what have been dubbed Hamilton and Perez on slick to intermediate tyres, where the intermediate kind of turned into slicks because they were worn so much. They kept him going. Hamilton had better pace. Obviously, Hamilton won the race. But the last lap on the Ferraris and Perez. Now, Ped, you obviously mentioned about a bit of a tantrum at the end. Charles Leclerc. Old Charlie boy.
Yeah, so the thing is, like, he was angry. Like, team tried to do their best to be like, look, you know, it's okay. And, you know, great race from where we were to where we ended up. And he was like, no, it's not. It's crap. And it's all my fault. And I get that he's angry. Again, he's 23. I get that he's angry. I get that he's ticked off with himself. Completely understand it. But I also completely think he did the right thing. I think he absolutely made the right call. He went for it. The conditions, who knows? He could have got Perez to outbreak himself. He might have made it. You know, there's so many things that could have happened there. And as they say, if you don't go for a gap, you're no longer a racing driver. If you're happy to sit there and be content in a season where the Drivers' Championship is about to be decided and the Constructors' Championship has already been decided, and if you sit there and you're content with third when you think there's a chance of second, get out. You know, I don't have time for that. I think Charles Leclerc made the exact right move. I don't think Ferrari were particularly bothered about it because they got the same result. They ended up, you know, third and fourth regardless. But I just think you've got to go for that. And you're 23, you're young enough to make these mistakes, to come back and be better from them. He beats himself up over it. But I do think he absolutely did the right thing. He made the right move and he tried it at the last second. And with a race that's been as unpredictable and crazy as it had been, I don't think he did anything wrong. And this is just my message of support to Charles Leclerc, because I'm sure he listens. And I'm sure he's very interested in what I have to say about his last lap shenanigans. So my message of support for Charles is, you did the right thing, keep doing it, because that's what we want to see.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And you know what? At least he tried something.
Yeah.
He did something. And at the end of the day, he nearly pulled it off. It was close. But from my point of view as well, I was quite pleased to see Vettel on the podium after the tough season he's had.
Mm.
It was nice to see him on the podium and actually, you know, fighting during the race and being in a position to try and overtake cars rather than being kind of 11th, 12th outside the points, wondering why he can't go quicker. It was nice to see he you know, still showing some fight there.
He wasn't the sort of... He was just pretty much steady all race, wasn't he? He's fifth early on, fifth for the first half of the race, but he just kept himself out of trouble. The experience he's got. It was good to see him on the podium also, because of the day that Lewis Hamilton won, and they are, you know, they've been rivals for a long time, and I think the respect between the two seems to be growing and seems to be getting more friendly or friendlier as they get older. And I just felt it was quite right for Vettel to be on the podium when Hamilton was celebrating his seventh title.
Yeah, absolutely. So we say about Hamilton, obviously he won the race. He was in the heaven, which is seven world championships. Now, the first guy who was there to congratulate him was Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, I mean, it's a class move from Seb. I think Seb's... I think he's come to terms with the fact that he's not going to have a competitive season. I think he came to terms with that a while ago. I also think he's in the departure lounge in his head. He's ready to move on from Ferrari. He's ready to move on to Racing Point and be there. You know, I don't care if you're the owner's son, Vettel's your number one. You know, Vettel is your alpha dog, absolutely. And you can't fault that. But yeah, I think it was a class move. It was good to see him on the podium. I do just want to pose a quick question for you both, just to get your opinion. Carlos Sainz was only about 3 seconds behind. Sorry, I just hit my microphone. Carlos Sainz was only about 3 seconds behind the two Ferraris when they crossed the line, just from looking at the classification. Do you think that if Charles Leclerc had made this move a few corners earlier and the same thing had happened, do you think Ferrari would have told Seb, look, get out of the way, this is Charles' podium, we can't punish him for making the move, we've got the space and the time to do it, let Charles have the podium? Do you think they would have done it? That's a tougher question to ask, answer. B, if they'd said to Seb to do it, do you think he would have done it? That's an easier question to answer.
Yeah, that's an easy one. No, I don't...
Because you see, that's the thing is, my instant response is no. Why would they? Of course, why wouldn't they? They wouldn't. But Seb's leaving. Do you want to give podium time to someone that's going to then take that potential momentum, take that exposure to another team at the end of the year, or do you want to get as much exposure and points and confidence for your young future number one? I genuinely think in a season where everything's pretty much already been decided that conversation would have been had if this had happened earlier in the race or earlier in the corner, in the lap, sorry. But I just wondered what you guys thought.
I think it would have been a brave call for them to do so. I mean, looking at the drivers, the Constructors' Championship, they're 6 points behind Renault in fifth. Ferrari currently sits sixth. So, I mean, they're not really... They wouldn't have gained too much from that. But I mean, if they had done it, I'd have been surprised. But I don't think Vettel would have been keen to get out of the way.
I don't think he would have complied at all. No.
After, was it Russia last year where they had that weird agreement that and slipstream each other and swap around in the late one. And
give it one more lap.
And then Vettel stayed out for too long and then ended up breaking down, which gave Hamilton the win, didn't it? Because he was able to pit under the safety car. Yeah. But yeah, I think also sort of back to old Charlie, he should be full of confidence after the year he's had, and he's been putting that Ferrari in places that it shouldn't be. But he does beat himself up quite a bit. Which I don't know if it's a strength or a weakness. I haven't quite decided on that yet. But also, maybe... I don't know, would he want that place if he'd have made a mistake earlier in the lap?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Do not know.
But it's worth noting on that Ferrari side of things that Mattia Binotto was not at the circuit. And that's probably the best the team have performed this season. So any signs there?
Was he not at the circuit because of COVID reasons or something? Or was he just couldn't be bothered this week?
I feel like it was potentially COVID reasons because I don't think he's there next week either.
Right, okay. No, I just, I mean, often when things like that happen and, you know, a coach or a leader can't be there for an event, sometimes the team will just pull together that little bit harder. I actually think that's a sign of a good leader. Because if you're a poor leader and you haven't instilled discipline in your team, when you're not there, things will fall apart. So I think if Binotto had not been there and Ferrari had been worse, if that's possible, had been worse than they had been for the rest of the season, then I think actually that points more of a finger of failing at him. But the fact that your team can perform in your absence and almost pull together to be like, right, guys, look, you know, we're a man down, the leader's not here, boss isn't here, we all need to work really extra hard to perform. And when that performance comes off, that I actually think is a bit more indicative of quality. That's personal feeling.
No, that's a good point, well made. Good point. And we might as well go into a bit more depth about Hamilton, obviously, making history. He's equaled the record for the amount of world championships, which is 7. Obviously, Michael Schumacher's the other guy. Do you think he can go on and do more?
He seems to. Is he getting better? I don't...
that's what everyone's scared of, isn't it?
Because he still seems to have the hunger. I mean, he still hates to lose, doesn't he? So it's not... He's still got the hunger and determination to keep doing it. He just doesn't make mistakes, does he? He's just quick and consistent and... Like, even when he does make mistakes, they're small mistakes, aren't they? He's just so consistent. You can see him getting... You can see him winning next year. So he's definitely, you think, 8 on the cards, and then it could be 9, 10, can tell.
I tell you, you ask, is he going to do more? I would not bet against him.
Yeah,
I would
that's
not,
for sure.
And I'll tell you this, if Lewis Hamilton came out tomorrow and said, I'm going to NASCAR, I'm going to MotoGP, I'm going to Formula E, I'm going to, you name a motorsport formula, I would not be surprised if he went and won it. And that's why I do think that potentially Lewis wants to do an Indy. And I think that he might want to, you know, do that. Could in the future, could Lewis start looking at, I want to do a Le Mans? Don't know. I feel like Callum will probably come out of somewhere and just be like, he wouldn't succeed at endurance because that's Callum's bag. Is it still Callum's bag? Callum, I hope it is still your bag. I haven't spoken to you in a while, so I hope it is still your bag. But yeah, I don't bet against it. But then I equally would not be surprised at all if he came back next year, won it again, got to 8, got to own the record outright, and then just went, do you know what? I'm stepping away and I'm going to focus on music. I'm going to focus on whether it's producing. I'm going to focus on activism. I'm going to focus on creating a number of charitable organisations that promote this cause. I'm going to go off and be part owner of a sports team in America. I would have no surprises if Lewis Hamilton turns around and goes, do you know what? I'm actually going to step away from Formula One so I can go do some real entrepreneurship. I would not be surprised in the slightest, and I genuinely think he'd probably succeed at it. I wouldn't listen to one of his albums if he released a rap album, though. I don't think I would do that. Someone would have to be like, oh no, this Lewis Hamilton shit is tight. You need to listen to it for me to just be like, oh, okay, I will. But I wouldn't be like, you know, opening my Spotify, super other streaming services are available, but I wouldn't be just running to listen to it as soon as it dropped at all. But I just think anything he turns his mind to, he's absolutely going to succeed. And that's not just Hamilton on Hamilton Love there. But that's observation of someone that has been driven, if you'll excuse the pun, so driven, so focused on being successful. And it comes back to, I think it was a quote that Toto made a few races ago. And he said, Hamilton wins, and then he sits in the debrief and talks like he came 15th. Okay. He says, the car was slow in these corners. And it's like, you won by 30 seconds. And he's just like, but we can do better. And I think it's that striving and driving. And you also look at the fact, you go back to Nico Rosberg, and I'm on a tear here, guys. I'm sorry. Just cut across me to shut me up, honestly. But you look back at Nico Rosberg, and Nico Rosberg won the world championship and then stepped away from Formula One to be a father and to be a husband. And that was kind of his reasoning. It was like, you know, this year my wife stepped up, she looked after our kid, and I had to really, really focus. And it took it out of me doing this, you know, day in, day out to try and win this championship from Lewis. And now that I've done it and I've fulfilled my dream and I'm a Formula One world champion, I can step away with no regrets. Thank you very much. And, you know, and he hasn't been tempted out of retirement to come in at the 30 seconds notice and do a race like a Nico Hülkenberg has. He's stepped away and gone, do you know what? I am done. And Lewis doesn't have a wife that we, you know, that I'm aware of. Lewis doesn't have kids. Lewis doesn't have that family. And I do wonder that if, because it does play a huge influence in the way that drivers are. And I think we've seen that with, they talk about Valtteri Bottas. He had changes in his personal circumstances. They say he went away, he came back more focused, more driven. I think Seb, someone was talking to me, it might have been Adam on who's in our podcast group as well, was saying, like, you know, Seb's got a kid now or two kids or something, and that's potentially changed his outlook. So I think that's a variable that you could factor into it. But if Lewis turns around and says, I'm going to dedicate the next 5 years of my life to racing in Formula One, I think he's our champion for the next 5 years. Full stop.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think he's got a lot more to give the sport, and it's so great to see that, you know, this champion who we've seen his whole Formula One racing career in front of us, and seen everything he's done from the first race up until the last race. So it's absolutely great to see someone do that. And
that's another point, isn't it, that he's been at the front for 14 years pretty much, hasn't he?
Yeah,
it's not just seven championships. He's been racing at the front 14 years. And as you know, just said, right, Nico Rosberg, 1 year to win it, and that took it out of him, and he had to retire. And Hamilton's just kept doing it year after year after year, and he's getting better, it looks like.
Yeah. And people talk, I mean, Rich, you were talking pre-show, before we started recording, about the tweet that said, what was the tweet? Tell us the tweet.
It basically said Lewis Hamilton could rescue a cat from a tree, and still people would claim it was actually the ladder.
Which is insane to me, because people say Lewis is only winning because he's got the best car. But they're the same people that will say Michael Schumacher is the greatest driver of all time because he has seven championships. You're telling me Schumacher didn't have the best car? Don't give me that. Because that Ferrari was insane. And you go, well, hang on, if the Ferrari was that good, why wasn't the other driver in it, which I believe for most of it was Rubens, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Why wasn't Rubens winning world championships? Well, because Rubens wasn't as good a driver as Schumacher. I'm not saying Schumacher's not a great driver.
And he also gave up his position for Michael.
Yeah, because because that was the whole thing. But I'm not saying he wasn't a great driver. But if you take a great driver and you put them in the best car, you're going to get dominance. You take a good driver and you put them in the best car, you're going to get Valtteri Bottas. So this whole argument of it's the car, if you put Lewis in another car, well, he did win. He did win a championship in another car, you know. So he's and that was back when regulations made it. But whatever. I'm getting on a tangent. I'm just really pleased for him. I'm really pleased for him. I really enjoyed watching it, and I think he's done fantastic work. And I think he's best of all time, personally.
Absolutely.
Michael Schumacher also gets credit for he got the team together at Ferrari and they built around him. You never hear the same credit given to Hamilton, for example.
Well, you're absolutely right, Kyle. If listeners want to go back and find it, I wouldn't be able to tell you what episode it was, but I seem to recall I am on this podcast on record saying Lewis Hamilton leaving McLaren and going to Mercedes is a mistake. I said that because that's what it looked like at the time. It looked like Mercedes were underperforming. This is when they'd brought Schumacher out of retirement and he was racing with Rosberg, and they didn't look competitive. They were, you know, blind squirrels finding nuts every once in a while when they had podiums or, you know, front row starts or whatever, second row starts. And McLaren was still, you know, this was the peak of Jensen and Lewis. They were still winning races. They were still driving really, really well. And I thought, no, you've made a mistake here. And, well, that's egg on my face, isn't it? And I'll readily acknowledge that, yeah. But then what do I know? Clearly. But Kyle, you're absolutely right. Are Mercedes this dominant if they don't have Lewis Hamilton? Not a chance. They don't develop the car in the way that they develop it. They don't have the racing feedback that they have from him if they're from getting it from someone else. Absolutely not. I think it's a fair point, and it's actually it raises a spotlight on the level of criticism that is directed Hamilton's way.
And just as one last mention, not that I'm bitter or anything, but I will always put Lewis Hamilton above Michael Schumacher, because from his career in Formula One, Lewis Hamilton has never deliberately crashed into another guy so he could win a world championship.
I like the way that you put that, so he could win a world championship in there as well, because I think Lewis has probably got his elbows out a few times, Rich. I don't think we can say that he's completely blameless and angelic in that way. But yes, I don't think Lewis has ever done something that would put someone at significant risk of injury, which I think Schumacher did a couple of times.
But yeah, just flashbacks to the 94 are suddenly happening in my head, and I'm getting a bit sad again, so
and a bit emotional, Rich. Maybe we should move on. Congratulations to Lewis Hamilton. It's been a dominant drive in an unusual season. And I will just say very quickly, there will be plenty of people who will be saying, "Well, doesn't really count as a real season, does it? Because COVID and everything was limited and everything was different." No, this is the hardest world championship he'll ever win, because everything was so different. Everything was so hard. The protocols, the bubbles, the worry, the risk, the fear of what's going on, having to limit everything that you do. You heard him talk about it in his post-race interview. "I'm going home and having a can of minestrone soup." Well, do you think if this wasn't in like COVID pandemic that he'd be having a can of minestrone soup in his hotel room? Absolutely not. So this has been a completely alien environment, and he had the one consistent has been his level of performance. So I would actually say, for me, this is almost his most impressive world championship. And I am done talking about Lewis Hamilton.
Well, there we go. If anyone listening wants to give us their opinions and thoughts on this whole thing, agree, disagree, let us know. Plenty of ways to get in touch with us. Social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. The handle for all three of those is @thenrf1. Remember, F1 Snackwatch and all of those. We want to see them as well. Head over to Patreon as well. Patreon.com/NRF1. patreon.com/NRF1. You will find the full edition of this podcast, including our Off the Weekend Awards, the Norfolk Notebook, and the NRF1 Pit Stops. These are coming up shortly for you Patreon listeners. Email us as well. The email address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And we're on Twitch. We mentioned earlier about some live watch-alongs. We'll do those soon. We'll make sure we give notice for when we plan to do them. But give us a follow on there. Just search the NRF1. And that would be great. And we hope to hear from you and see you there soon.
That's also their channel if they want to get me to do my PowerPoint presentation about Lance Stroll's nickname. Don't forget that, listeners. Don't forget.
Someone we also need to give a shout out to is Sam Todd on Twitter. as always, sending us great tweets and giving us great content. So thank you as ever, Sam. But this week it said question/challenge for you guys. Seven-time champ Lewis Hamilton has won at 29 different circuits in F1, having raced at 33. Name the four he hasn't been on the top step. Now, Sam, we think we have the answer for you. We had a big discussion on our WhatsApp group, and we came to the conclusion, so please let us know if you're right. But we think it is India, Korea, the French Grand Prix, but the one at Magny-Cours rather than the new one at Le Castellet that there is. So Magny-Cours. And we think the last one is Valencia. So India, Korea, Magny-Cours, Valencia. We think those four are the ones that he's never been on the top step at. But keep them coming, Sam. We hope that's right. Please let us know. But yeah, we look forward to more tweets and everything from you.
Hello, everyone. This is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Next up, we should go and really, probably quite quickly, because we've gone on quite a long time, but we'll...
It's my fault. You can cut out 90% of my stuff.
It's fine. It's good. It's good content. But just rattle through some of the news, the latest talking points. Toto Wolff has said that Hamilton contract talks, that's hard to say quickly. He said the contract talks are going to start shortly. So no doubt there'll be an announcement in the next week or two. More other news, Callum Ilott, young British driver, he's going to be driving for Alfa Romeo in the Abu Dhabi end of season test, which according to the article I was reading, apparently that makes it likely that Mick Schumacher will be going to Haas. Guys, you excited to see what he can do?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean he's clear favourite to win the F2 title, so yeah. Anybody that wins the F2 title deserves a good shot in F1 in the following season. So
yeah, definitely.
There'll be a bit of pressure on him because he's, you know, you mentioned the first race is going to be a lot of fuss around him, but I think he's had plenty of experience of dealing his surname, so looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Other reports I was reading, apparently Mercedes and Aston Martin are going to be sharing the safety car / medical car duties next season.
Yes, I saw that.
So one of Lewis Hamilton's greatest comments is the safety car is so slow. So do you think the Aston will be any faster?
Good question. No, I don't think any road car, no matter how tricked out, will ever go fast enough as a safety car to make Lewis Hamilton happy that the safety car is going fast. So will it be faster? It could well be. But will it be fast enough? No, never.
And the final bit of news we need to talk about, we'll get stuck in a little bit on this one, but there's been calls that are growing more and more for Hamilton to be given a knighthood. I've seen several former racing Formula One personalities as well as MPs have been calling for him to have a knighthood. Guys, we were talking about this a bit earlier on. I'm pretty sure we're all in the same boat. We'd love to see him get one, and we think he deserves it.
Yeah, I very much am on this train, and I again, you know, long-time listeners will probably hopefully remember I've been talking about Lewis's knighthood, I think, since he won his fifth championship. When you compare him to the success of other British sports stars who have received knighthoods, Lewis's, I'm not saying Lewis's accomplishments are better, but they're certainly no less. It's a singular level of dominance, and people say, oh, it's not singular because Schumacher did it. Well, yeah, okay, Schumacher did it, but Lewis has led more laps, scored more points, okay, the points went up more, fine, he's had more podiums, he's had more poles, he's in almost every single meaningful category, Lewis is ahead. And in the one that everyone talks about, because it's the easiest one to remember, Lewis is level. So it is singular. It is a generational talent. And lost in all of that, and I come back to it, lost in all of that is how bloody good he is behind the wheel. He is not a point and shoot driver. He is a talented driver that has a feel for the track in any kind of weather. So, you know, he is an absolute maverick. So, yeah, he is one of our finest British sporting heroes. and he absolutely should be given a knighthood. And anyone who comes at me with that tax evasion, lives in Monaco crap, get out, because I have zero time for it. Because most professional athletes will, and I have zero basis for this, so don't come at me and say, oh, where's your sources, because I ain't got none. And but I would wager most professional athletes do their training and living in another country. If they, I know Mo Farah went over and trained in America, which meant he had to, by definition, live in America. So, yeah, they might not live in this country, but what they're contributing in terms of, well, in terms of who they are, what they represent, the notoriety that comes with it. And I'm aware that Lewis is doing things with, you know, the Hamilton Commission, and he's working towards equality. He's working against racism. There's an activist side to what he's doing as well. So, yeah, he's... I think he should be, yeah. And then that's it. I'm out.
And just to pick up on this, you say you haven't got any time for that, Ped. People coming at you with these other things about tax evasion. You've got so little time for that. You're not even prepared to make a PowerPoint presentation to say how not prepared you are for that.
I will make a PowerPoint presentation, but the first slide when I press it will just say "fuck you." And then the next slide will say any questions. And that is my PowerPoint presentation that I'm going to make for anyone that comes at me with this. So you're going to have to beep that, by the way.
That's fine. Don't worry. I've literally just written down where the swears are the whole way through, so I can easily find it. But
brilliant.
Just to add on the knighthood calls, I wouldn't be surprised personally. I think it's deserved at any point in his career. But I wouldn't be surprised if they wait until he retires from the sport, just so his accomplishments that he's had in Formula One can truly be recognised at how great they are. Because I suppose if they'd given him one at five, and then obviously now he's gone and got seven and possibly more, people would be like, what's the next step up? And I suppose in the end, they'd have to make him a lord or something for it. But I wouldn't be surprised if they wait until he retires. But you have to say, looking at what he's done, it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, we talk about other sports personalities. Marcus Rashford has obviously got his campaign about school meals. And I think he's being given a knighthood or honours of some sort for it. Now, Lewis Hamilton, obviously, it's a bit of a different level. But the things that he's doing for Black Lives Matter, for equality and all those kind of things, he's really trying to make a difference for his community. And for minority ethnic groups, which is great to see, you know, a real big star in the limelight, highlighting these issues that he's faced and other people face.
Yeah, absolutely, and doing it without, well, not without fear. Sorry, doing it regardless of the fear of reprisal. So there's plenty of people out there. I mean, we can go, I know, as I mentioned earlier, a big NFL fan. You go back all the way to Colin Kaepernick, and the stand that Colin Kaepernick took, ironically using the word stand because he was actually kneeling, but the stand that Colin Kaepernick took to combat racial inequality, social justice in America, and the very threat of people supporting that was, you'll lose your sponsorship deals, you'll lose money, people will boycott your team, people will boycott your product, people will boycott everything you have to say about it. And having the courage to be able to stand up and say, actually, do you know what, I don't care that you're, if you're the kind of organization that's going to back out on me because I stand up for something that I believe in, I don't want you as part of my existence. I don't need that. It's easy enough for him to say, and I get where people will come from, that it's easy enough for Lewis to say, I'm not bothered if I lose my endorsements, because the guy's got millions, if not tens, if not hundreds, already in the bank. And I get that completely. So to him, what is the risk? Well, it is a risk. It is a risk. It's a reputational risk. It's a societal risk. And I commend him for taking the stand, and I commend him for doing everything that he is doing. And to do it, as you say, Rich, from a position of superstardom, the more you have, the more you have to lose. And Lewis is doing this regardless, not because he's not afraid of losing it, but he's doing it regardless of the fear of losing it. And I think that should be commended, absolutely. And on your point on retirement, Rich, they didn't knight Mo Farah after he retired.
They did.
They knighted him after he won. Same with Bradley Wiggins, and same with, who did you say? Who was the cricketer chap?
Alistair Cook.
Him. And all he did was win the Ashes once in like 100 years. So, yeah. Get that.
Scored a lot of hundreds as well, just to back up to Alistair.
All right, okay. All right, sorry, Kyle. Was it not painfully obvious from this conversation that I don't know much about cricket?
Oh dear.
Just in case Alistair listens, you know, just, you know.
Probably does.
Oh,
big,
yeah, I'm sure he does.
Big F1 fan, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah, we might as well move straight on to the next race. The next one, the Bahrain Grand Prix at the Sakhir Circuit. It's a first of a Bahrain double. This one, I gather, is going to be on the international circuit. So it's the usual layout before we go to their kind of outer ring circuit, which is bound to be exciting. But it's a night race. It's often exciting. What do you expect from it, guys?
Is this the race where it starts out day and then it becomes night? This is that one, isn't it? Is this the sunset race or is it full night?
Abu Dhabi is the sunset.
Abu Dhabi is the sunset race.
This is the full night one.
Full night one.
In the desert.
I think it looks fantastic because when they end up racing under those floodlights. Because, I mean, the only other floodlit race we used to have was Singapore, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's no longer on the circuit. So,
not this season anyway.
No, not this season it hasn't been. So, having a night race is awesome. I think the cars do look good. I think in the desert, I mean, the Bahrain track always looks good. Historically, I always remember it as it's a bit of a boring track, but then every time we say that, it ends up being a barnstormer of a race. So honestly, I don't know what to expect.
It's been a lot better on the lights, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
Since it's gone on the lights at Bahrain, it's the racing.
Do you think that's
better.
A temperature thing?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure temperature does drop, doesn't it, when the sun goes down in the desert?
I was just going to say that. I think that's the nighttime temperatures making it cooler, easier to switch the tyres on, and they can really race.
See, that's great minds, Richard.
Great minds. I had one of the greatest races the last decade, I suppose. Was it 2014, Hamilton-Rosberg battle?
The Duel of the... Duel in the Desert? Duel of the Desert? I don't know what they called it. Well, yeah. That one.
The Desert Duel.
Yeah. That was a brilliant race, that one.
It's had a few decent races. A bit of overtaking, isn't there? Sort of with these cars and up to the second corner, but it's probably the fourth corner, isn't it? But, Some decent races recently.
Hopefully
another one.
Yeah, hopefully another exciting one, and it should be good. Have you any predictions you guys want to throw out there?
Ooh. Oh, crikey, you caught me on the hop there, haven't you?
I'll go for Bottas victory.
I was going to go Bottas not even going to be on the podium.
Oh, okay.
So we'll do that. Let's be diametrically opposed. You say Bottas victory and I'm going to say Bottas non-podium finish. But he'll finish. So if he DNFs, I don't get any points for that.
Fair enough.
He has to finish not on the podium.
So from places 4 to 20 or however many are classified.
Yeah, however many are classified. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. Good shouts. Any others you want to throw in there?
What about you? You got to do one.
Oh, I've got to do one.
Throw us under the bus.
Fast. Usually pretty fast circuit. Let's say Renault to outscore McLaren.
Ooh. Big. That is juicy, my friend.
How is the battle for third looking after the weekend? I haven't really...
I'll have a look.
The structures...
I think Racing Point took the advantage. So, yeah, they took the advantage. So they're third on 154. McLaren fourth on 149. We mentioned about Renault having a difficult weekend. That was in our Patreon bits, guys, if anyone wants to get on there and have a listen. Renault fifth on 136. And then Ferrari obviously had a good weekend and they're sixth on 130. So Ferrari aren't out of it, you know.
3-6 covered by 24 points.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That really is.
And then my second prediction has flashed in my head. Ferrari will not score a point.
Oh, that's huge. That is huge.
I think they'll struggle. Quite a power circuit, isn't it? Got long straights.
Well, if you're going to say Ferrari won't score a point, I'm going to say double points finish for AlphaTauri.
Double points. Oh.
Well, that's a good shout. They like it around there, don't they?
They love it. They bloody love it, mate. But I reckon double double points for the AlphaTauris, and you're saying no points for the Ferraris.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I've just looked at the 2019 Bahrain Grand Prix results, and qualifying, the two Ferraris had a 1-2.
Ooh.
In the race, they dropped to third and fifth. So,
it's not great for them, is it?
No. So, who knows? We'll see. Obviously, it's very difficult to compare to last year. But
it's a different Ferrari this year,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely. So,
when did the Toro Rosso finish last year? Because I always feel they do well there.
Oh, I'll find out.
Because didn't we vote Gasly's fourth place? Like,
yeah, the season before.
Well, the season before, was it?
Yeah, so Gasly was in Red Bull, of course Red Bull, last year. Yeah. So he got eighth. Albon got ninth. Okay. And the other Toro Rosso was 12th.
Well, Danica Viet.
Yeah.
don't even name him.
the other Toro Rosso.
I didn't mean it like that. I was just saying the other Toro Rosso. So, yeah. But on that note, I think we're pretty much there. It's been a long one, but it's been good. And it's been great. You know, it's deserved to give this race that much attention, because it was such a good race, the Turkish Grand Prix. I mean, Lewis said on winning his seventh title, he's only just getting started. And I can say the same for us here on the NRF1 podcast. We're not over yet, but obviously, sorry, this season hasn't been quite as consistent as usual. But with ever-changing COVID situation that we're currently in, there's plenty more to come from us for next year and beyond. So on that note, we will return with E272, which will be our review of Bahrain. Being back-to-back races, I don't know if we'll do a podcast for each Bahrain race, or if we'll put them into one podcast. We'll see. Keep an eye out anyway. But in the meantime, thank you, Kyle and Ped, for joining me. It's been great.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, mate.
It's been really good. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye from the crew.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me. Goodbye.